Lost and Found. Found and Lost and Lost Found.
Hallo und willkommen zur März-Ausgabe von Lost and Found auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z. In den ersten 60 Minuten erwartet euch ein Ausflug auf die Spielwarenmesse in Nürnberg, die Anfang Februar stattgefunden hat. Wir gehen in die Luft mit ein paar Drohnen, die mehr als nur Spielzeuge sind. Außerdem schießen wir Raketen auf Wasserbasis ab und rasen um die Wette in Sachen Carrera-Bahn. In der zweiten Stunde geht's dann auf die internationalen Filmfestspiele in Berlin und es erwarten euch einige Interviews mit Filmemachern und Filmemacherinnen sowie ihren Hauptdarstellerinnen. Die musikalische Untermalung übernimmt in dieser Ausgabe das neue Album von Die Sterne. Ein Rückblick auf 25 Jahre mit Gastbands, die die Sterne-Songs neu interpretieren. Am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. Viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören. Zeit für die Spielwarenmesse in Nürnberg. Ich bin am Stand von Propel gewesen und zunächst habe ich mir ein paar Drohnen vorführen lassen, bevor mir dann einer der Promoter mehr zu diesen besonderen Spielzeugen erklärt. Ganz aktuell gibt's hier kleine Star Wars Drohnen in verschiedenen Motiven und Größen, die darauf ausgelegt sind, miteinander zu spielen oder gegeneinander.
Hello, my name is Jack Bishop and I'm our head development pilot here at Propel RC.
Track, 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 track. Music, music off. All sounds off. Track one.
And you can hear the sound while you're...
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're flying around, you can fly, you can shoot your lasers. You can do barrel rolls.
I'm not such a bad pilot myself.
Yeah! Oh! Okay, stay sharp.
And the controller speaks to you. If you get hit, then you'll hear the explosion sounds. And if you hit somebody, then you will get a congratulatory sound from your co-pilot saying, great shot, kid.
How long were your flights? 8 minutes?
Flights are 6 to 8 minutes, depending on how you fly. The drones have three speed modes, so mode one, mode two, and mode three.
What's the difference between the modes?
So the first mode is a very, very slow flying mode. It's very, very easy for beginners to fly in that mode. Mode 2 is a little bit quicker, and mode 3 is kind of the fastest the drone will fly. In mode 3, the drone will fly up to 35 miles an hour. So they're very, very high performance, very fast, agile, exciting to fly. And they really are great fun. As you can see how stable they are. If I flick the pressure sensor on here, we call them repulsor lifts, and that's what the in the Star Wars universe, that's what they call the lifts on the ships, which hold them at their correct altitude.
Can I take a picture?
Absolutely. You can see now I'm flying with just one hand.
Okay.
If I get Trevor here to shoot me.
Lucky shot.
Okay, so if I shoot you next, Trev, you can hear if I shoot Trevor.
Clean hit.
Great hit. Don't get cut.
Ah, the force guides you well.
Hopefully it stops when you hit three times.
So you get three lives up here. You can see I lost two lives in that game. So three lives and you're out, and the drone will automatically crash land to the floor.
But safely crash land.
Yes, yes. You won't break. We inject all of our drones in a material called PP, polypropylene, rather than ABS, which is what a lot of other drone manufacturers use. By doing this, we make our drones extremely strong and very, very smooth flying.
And flexible at the same time.
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Every single unit is hand-painted, so there are no two units the same in the world.
Okay.
So when you do buy your collector's edition...
What's the weight?
All under 100 grams.
Wow. And you can just flip the battery and change?
So yes, the battery is here. So you can see we've got a custom designed battery. You flick the switch and you can pull the battery out. The battery is a part of the drone. in. Get your battery back in. No wires to connect. Super easy. Turn your drone on first. Put it on the floor. Turn your controller on.
X-wing engaged. Ready for takeoff.
Press the auto start button. The drone automatically takes off. Go around a meter in height. You can then fly away.
Nice. And how much will it be on the German market?
So I think the German market will be around 229-239 for the collector's edition box. But in September 1st is our release date, and we're actually bringing out a smaller box without the lights and the sounds, and that will retail for around 179, cheaper price point. We've filed 12 different patents on the technology that we have on the drone, and when you first sync your drone, you lock in a 2.4 gigahertz network to control your drone. You also lock in a specific code which you then shoot out the front of your drone. The drone that you hit, when it receives that code, it sends it back to your transmitter, and your transmitter then broadcasts that out into the space. So everybody's controllers are speaking to each other at any one time. So that can then, when my controller picks that up, it says, hey, I know that you're drone number one, and you just hit drone number two, and it will give me instant feedback that I just hit somebody. And in laser battling, laser battling toys, that's the first time that the person that did the shooting has ever gotten a response that says, no, good shot, you've been successful, which is crazy. Yeah. We are bringing out a companion app as well, which connects to the controller via Bluetooth, and the controllers all constantly update the app with the game data. So how many kills you've had, how many shots, your shot accuracy, and in there you can create all different game types. So capture the leader, all against all. You can only kill Emperor Palpatine if you choose to be him. So it's a very, very compelling app, very compelling story, and a really, really exciting product.
So I've seen the bat drone out there.
Yes, we have our bat drone as well. We have two different versions of the bat drone. We have the smaller, which is kind of a palm-sized drone, which is around 49 euros. This is high speed, a lot of fun to fly. And we have our larger Batwing, which has a HD camera. So it has a 720p HD camera, and you can fly around and you can film your Batwing chronicles with that one.
And use an app on your phone.
So they both come with controllers. We tend to use controllers on a lot of our products rather than app controls, simply because it gives the user a much better experience. Controlling a drone via an app is notoriously difficult to do. And we want our customers to have the best experience there is. So here we can see the small Batwing flying around.
It's all the coming in September.
So this is actually out now.
Nice.
The large and small Batwings are out now, so you can buy those online, and they will be in German retailers very soon.
And it's very quick.
Yes.
And they're all designed for indoors or very slow speed wind.
Absolutely. So 5 to 7 mile an hour, the winds. It can cope with the wind. As you can see with the Batwing and the Star Wars drones, the propellers, the blades, are underneath the drone rather than on top. Now we call this reverse propulsion.
It was your idea?
Yes, okay. It was, yeah. When we first came up with the concepts of the drones, we had certain criteria that we wanted to meet. The drones had to look as beautiful as they do in their films, they have to fly extremely well and be extremely safe, indestructible. So by putting the blades underneath, what we do is we manage to maintain the look of the ship on the top without ruining, with having blades on the top, so you can't actually see your Batwing, all you can see is blades. The blades are injected in clear polycarbonate, so you can't see them when they're spinning. If you go lower to the ground, the blades disappear and it looks like you're really flying your Batwing.
Yeah, looks great. A smaller controller.
Yes. Yeah, smaller controller on that one. The Star Wars drones have to have a much larger controller because of all of the technology that's inside. You have three different wireless networks in every single controller, so that takes up a lot of space. And if you can feel the gimbals on the Star Wars drones, they're extremely high quality gimbals. And we come up with many ingenious ideas. Here, over on the left-hand side, you can actually switch between your barometer mode and non-barometer mode, which allows you to go from zero throttle to 100% throttle extremely quickly. We also have a training mode, so if you're a brand new user to your drone and you're a little bit worried about it, you can put it into training mode. Makes it very soft, very, very easy to fly. But also in the barometric air pressure sensor, it puts a height and a ground limit. So you can't go any higher than 2 meters or any lower than 50 centimeters. So you can't crash into your ceiling or into a tree, and you can't crash into any chairs or your cat, for example.
Do I need an insurance in Germany to fly this?
No, you don't. All of the drones are become under the weight limits that's required to register your drone, so you can literally buy the drones, go fly and have fun.
Gleich mehr zu den Propel Battle Drones und anderen. Gleich mehr zu den Propel Battle Drones und den anderen Drohnen und Flugkörpern, die hier angeboten werden. Zwischendurch ein wenig Musik.
Ja, hallo, mein Name ist Gregor Steinborn. Ich bin Geschäftsführer für die deutschsprachigen Länder Deutschland, Österreich, Schweiz und für Benelux bei Propel AC.
Ich habe mir jetzt schon hier jede Menge angeguckt. Es gab so ein paar Demonstrationen mit den kleinen Drohnen. Es ging tatsächlich vor 12 Jahren los mit einem Helikopter mit 2 Propellern, die gegenläufig sind, damit das Ding schön stabil in der Luft ist. War das damals eine revolutionäre Idee bei Spielzeug, das ferngesteuert ist?
Ja, am Anfang waren die Helikopter hatten nur ein Rotorblatt. Unser CEO ist ein begnadeter Produktentwickler. Der hat sehr schnell gemerkt, dass unsere Konsumenten oder die Konsumenten sehr schnell auch den Spaß verlieren, wenn man nicht einfach steuern kann, und hat dann dieses gegenläufige Rotorblattsystem entwickelt, auch patentieren lassen. Und das hat dazu geführt, dass die Produkte eigentlich einen solchen Hype erfahren haben, weil sie auf einmal einfach zu steuern waren. Und ja, es war eine Revolution. Ja.
In den 12 Jahren ist ganz viel passiert. Die Produktpalette ist gewachsen. Es gibt ganz große Modelle. Natürlich sind die Drohnen hinzugekommen, die heute, glaube ich, die wichtigste Rolle spielen, oder?
Ja, richtig. Das Helikoptergeschäft ist letzten Endes eins, wo der Lebenszyklus langsam ausläuft. Auch das ist dann eine Sache, wo man sich sehr schnell in neue Felder, hinsichtlich neuen Feldern orientiert hat. Dadurch sind die Drohnen unser Hauptgeschäft geworden, unser Kerngeschäft, und die Helikopter laufen eher mit.
Was ist denn gerade die größte Drohne und ist die noch ein reines Spielzeug oder kann die schon mehr mittlerweile?
Ja, ich würde sagen, die größte Drohne, die wir im letzten Quartal rausbringen wollen bei uns, ist die Race-Drohne, die bis zu 100 Stundenkilometern schnell wird, auch mit einer First-Person-View-Kamera. Dann über die 5,8 GHz Livestreaming. Ist auch die momentan einzige, die wir mit einem Brushless-Motor zur Verfügung stellen, damit von der Preislage etwas höher als unsere anderen Produkte, die eher noch in einem Hobby-konsumerfreundlichen Preissegment sich befinden.
Brushless heißt ganz einfach weniger Abnutzung.
Richtig, genau. Laufen runder, laufen leiser, laufen abnutzungsfreundlicher und sind halt dann auch für entsprechend Performance und Profi-Eigenschaften zuständig.
Hier am Stand, wenn man von außen vorbeiläuft, gibt es natürlich gleich 2 Eyecatcher. Ja, das eine sind die Bad Drones, die schon auf dem Markt sind, sprich also das Fledermaus-Design, Batman und Co. Das ist jetzt, glaube ich, letztes Jahr vorgestellt worden und jetzt sind sie direkt auf dem Markt.
Richtig, wir haben es geschafft tatsächlich, nachdem wir die Lizenzverträge abgeschlossen haben, innerhalb von eigentlich 9 Monaten ein Produkt zur Marktreife zu bringen, sowohl mit Batman als auch mit Star Wars, was ja auch wieder eine Revolution für den Markt ist. Wir haben auch dafür einen extra neuen Antrieb entwickelt, auch wieder patentieren lassen. Die Rotorblätter sitzen nicht mehr oben drauf, das sähe nicht so schön aus, um diese ikonischen Silhouetten darstellen zu können. Wir haben das unten drunter gesetzt, das Reverse Propulsion System nennen wir das. Also die Drohnen fliegen auf einem Luftkissen sozusagen und dadurch können wir einfach diese tollen Formen darstellen, produzieren.
Die Drohnen sind auch ein bisschen kleiner. Die kleinste hat, glaube ich, gerade mal so eine Handgröße von so, ja, nicht zu großen Händen, fast zierliche Hände. Und also jetzt bei den Bad Drones zum Beispiel. Und die größere sind dann ungefähr gut 2 Hände groß. Und wenn die hier durch den Raum sausen, dann erreichen die ja auch schon ganz schöne Geschwindigkeiten. Aber vor allem, was egal wo sie stehen, übrig bleibt, ist der optische Eindruck auch, den hinterlassen Sie. Also diese Idee, das nach unten zu verlegen, wie kommt man auf sowas? Haben Sie da einen Einblick? Haben Sie das mitgekriegt, diese Entwicklung?
Ja und nein. Also wie gesagt, unser CEO ist unser wichtigster, unser bester Produktentwickler, der dann die Ideen auch hat und dann gemeinsam mit Jack, mit dem Sie eben hier unterwegs waren, mit unserem Entwickler- und Designteam, dann auch zur Umsetzung bringt. Dann für ihn war einfach klar, wir müssen das schaffen, die Propeller nach unten zu bringen. Und dann hat er einen Weg gesucht, das zu tun. Und die Jungs haben das hinbekommen.
Was auch auffällt ist, es gibt jetzt diese neue Serie, die Star Wars Serie, wo es verschiedene Modelle gibt, auch in verschiedenen Packages. Da habe ich schon lustige Dinge gesehen und gehört. Also sieht auch optisch super aus, allein die Verpackung. Und was aber deutlich ist, ist, es gibt ganz unterschiedliche Fernbedienungen. Also die Bedrones haben noch so eine kleine, sieht fast ein bisschen nach Spielzeug aus, während die andere schon so ein bisschen größer ist, mehr Funktionen hat und richtige Regler etc. für die Star Wars Geschichte.
Ja, bei den Bedrone-Drohnen sind wir noch eher bei einer halbwegs normalen, konsumigen Variante der Drohne unterwegs. Bei den Star Wars Drohnen können wir fast nicht mehr nur von einer Drohne reden. Da haben wir eine komplette Welt darum kreiert, die natürlich auf der einen Seite die Drohne einmal mit dieser ikonischen Silhouette darstellt. Wir haben ein Laser-Battling eingebaut, wo wir mit Li-Fi-Technologie, wir sind wohl auch mit die Ersten, die in einem Consumer-Endprodukt Li-Fi-Technologie, also Informationsübertragung über Licht bringen werden. Und der Controller, der ist deshalb so groß und umfangreich geraten, weil er einfach voll mit Technik und Innovationen steckt, die auch nichts mehr mit einer in Anführungszeichen normalen Drohne zu tun haben.
Haben wir ja vorhin gehört, spricht, gibt die Schüsse aus, gibt Befehle, Commands aus, verrät einem auch, ob man getroffen ist von anderen, gerade wenn man eben in diesem Battle-Mode ist. Das ist ja durchaus faszinierend. Und es soll noch eine App dazu geben.
Richtig, also das ist das, was ich eben angesprochen habe. Es ist nicht nur der Controller und die Drohne, es gibt dazu noch eine App. Diese App kommuniziert oder über diese App kommunizieren alle, die in einem Battle sich befinden oder die zusammenfliegen, kommuniziert untereinander. Die Li-Fi-Technologie sorgt dafür, dass das in Lichtgeschwindigkeit geschieht, inklusive der Verbindung natürlich dann der Abgleich mit der Cloud. Also jeder weiß zu jedem Zeitpunkt, wer wie viele Leben hat, wer mit wem kämpft, wer gegen wen kämpft. Das ist das eine, dass also im direkten, im Live-Battlen oder im Live-Fliegen die App Informationen gibt. Die App ist aber auch dafür da. Sie ist ein vollständiger Flugsimulator. Sie führt mich in ganz einfachen Schritten und dann 36 Missionen dahin, dass dass ich am Ende die Drohne halbwegs so fliegen kann wie ein Pilot von uns. Und darüber hinaus ist es noch eine eigenständige Online-Gaming-Welt. Das heißt, ich muss die Drohne, die so schön verpackt ist und in diesem Showcase und mit Musik und Sound versehen ist, muss ich gar nicht fliegen. Ich kann die App nutzen, um mit meinem Freund in Hongkong oder in den USA entsprechend ein Battle durchzuführen und sozusagen online zu gamen.
Das ist also nochmal eine zweite Idee, die damit dahinter steckt, diese ganze Online-Welt zu erschließen.
Richtig. Und das ist auch das, was die Community ja eigentlich sucht, was die Community, wovon die Community auch lebt, wenn man also die Celebration sieht, wo die Menschen aus der ganzen Welt zusammenkommen, um Star Wars zu feiern. Das wollen wir auch mit der Drohne erreichen, dass die Menschen zusammenkommen, Star Wars feiern, zusammen Spaß haben, sich freuen und das halt entweder über die Online-Welt, aber was uns natürlich lieber ist, und dafür werden wir auch dann Wettkämpfe ausrichten, also den deutschen Meister, den französischen Meister küren. Wir wollen, dass die Leute auch tatsächlich real zusammenkommen, live spielen und dann das Ganze wird dann gipfeln für diesen ersten Launch, den wir haben in einer Weltmeisterschaft in Amerika, wo dann um ein nicht unerkleckliches Preisgeld gebettelt wird.
Star Wars sind im Moment drei Drohnen vorgesehen, oder?
Wir haben aktuell drei. Wir haben noch einen Pre-Production-Sample, wie es so schön heißt, den Millennium Falcon. Der wird am 1.9. auch verfügbar sein. Wird auch das Hero-Produkt von Disney für seinen Force Friday-Aktion sein. Es sind schon mehrere dann in Planung für nächstes Jahr oder die Folgejahre. Das ist natürlich das, was auch unser Lizenzpartner gerne sehen möchte, dass er einen Partner an der Hand hat, der auch vorausdenkt, der weiterdenkt und der nicht nur einmal ein Produkt in den Markt stellt, was sagenhaft toll ist, aber danach es dabei belässt.
Ja, das nächste, was ja dann dazu kommt zur Fernbedienung, ist mit Sicherheit mal so ein Fernbedienungshalter, so ein Halsumhänger, wo dann das Star Wars-Motiv mit drauf ist etc., dass man die Fernbedienung nicht aus der Hand legen muss und nicht versehentlich fallen lässt oder so, oder gibt es sie eh schon?
Ich glaube, die gibt es in der Form noch nicht, aber wenn wir über den Millennium Falcon, den für nächstes Jahr in Planung ist, dann auch mit GPS und mindestens zwei Kameras reden, dann könnte es sein, dass es dazu vielleicht dann eine Halterung gibt.
Was auch noch spannend ist, habe ich jetzt an der Fernbedienung nicht ausprobiert, hat die eigentlich auch so ein Force Feedback, wie wir es quasi von Smartphones kennen?
Vibrationen, ja, das ist also das, man sieht, wenn man getroffen wird, dann wackelt die Drohne. Das ist das eine Zeichen, dass man getroffen wurde. Das zweite Zeichen ist, dass auf dem Controller selber ein Licht erlischt. Und das dritte Zeichen ist, dass man einen entsprechenden, keinen Stromschlag, aber einen entsprechenden Wackler, eine entsprechende Vibration merkt. Ja.
Also spannend, was es da in dem Bereich gibt. Gibt es noch andere Bereiche, in denen wir Neues erwarten dürfen in nächster Zeit? Ich meine, das ist ja jetzt schon mit den Star Wars-Geschichten etc., mit den Propellern von unten, dass die Design, dass die Optik erhalten bleibt von den Fluggeräten, das ist ja schon mal eine sehr gute Idee. Was gibt es als nächstes?
Wir sind durchaus in Gesprächen auch in der Batman-Linie auszuweiten, was die Charaktere angeht, also mit Warner Brothers andere Charaktere abzudecken. Das ist eine der bekanntesten Lizenzen, ist da im Gespräch, oder dass wir die Hover Heroes mit weiteren Köpfen ausstatten. Wie gesagt, bei Star Wars sind wir stark in der Entwicklung von neuen Produkten, aber auch in unserem Standardsortiment. Wir sind momentan, hören wir halt bei der Race-Drohne einigermaßen auf. Aber wir haben eine andere Firma, eine weitere Firma, Austin Robotics heißt die, wo wir dann tatsächlich mit redundanten Satellitensystemen, GPS gesteuert, bis zu 2 Kilometer Livestream auf eine Kamera, auf eine Brille, VR-Brille oder aufs Handy, dass wir auch da versuchen, demnächst uns ja unsere Kompetenz an den Markt zu bringen und uns zu beweisen.
Wer schon mal einen Blick auf so Entwicklungen werfen will, es gibt bestimmt eine gute Adresse, unter der die Leute alles finden.
Wir haben den Flight Club, den Propel Flight Club online. Wir haben Propel SW für Star Wars online Website. Das gleiche auch für Batman. Also einfach mal irgendwas mit Propel und RC Flight Club oder Batman Star Wars eingeben. Und da werden Sie auf dem Laufenden gehalten.
Radio Z. Hallo, Sie hören Radio Z. Böse Zungen behaupten, einige unserer Moderatorinnen und Moderatoren würden manchmal stottern.
Ja.
Wir hätten Schwierigkeiten mit der Technik.
Huch, was ist denn da passiert?
Oder es gäbe oftmals Sendelöcher. Ich bitte Sie, seien Sie nicht so kleinlich. Radio Z ist das einzige freie Radio in ganz Bayern. Ohne Werbung, ohne Charts und ohne formatierte Informationen. Radio Z bringt politische Berichterstattung mit Hintergrund und Biss, informiert über kulturelle Ereignisse jenseits der Kassetten und spielt eure Lieblingsmusik von Akte XX bis Zosch.
Hello, you listener.
Werdet Mitglied bei Radio Z. Anrufen unter 0911 450060 oder geht auf www.radio-z.net.
Von Peter Lichts Neuinterpretation des Universal-Tellerwäscher-Stückes von Die Sterne kommen wir zurück zur Spielwarenmesse in Nürnberg, die Anfang Februar stattgefunden hat, und lassen dort Raketen in die Luft steigen mit Hilfe von Wasser. Nichts Neues? Oder doch?
Ja, guten Tag, ich bin Robert Klima. Wir stellen also Modellraketenbausätze und auch die Treibsätze, das ganze Zubehör dazu her. Modellraketen, das sind eine Sparte des Modellbaus, und zwar, die werden mit Treibsätzen angetrieben, fliegen so 200, 300 Meter hoch und kommen am Fallschirm wieder runter. Kann man also immer wieder verwenden.
Hier gibt es was Neues auf der Messe. Man muss sagen, neu ist das Prinzip ja nicht, aber das, was ihr habt, ist neu. Und das sind eigentlich ganz normale Plastikflaschen, so 1,5 Liter Flaschen, die ihr mit eurem Satz zu einer Rakete umbaut. Wie funktioniert das? Wie kann man sich das vorstellen?
Ja gut, also die Wasserrakete, das Prinzip gibt es, wie gesagt, schon länger. Unseres ist halt auf dem technisch modernsten Stand. Und zwar, wir können mit ganz normalen Flaschen über 100 Meter Flughöhe erreichen. Nur mit Wasser und Luft als Antrieb, das ist das Rückstoßprinzip, Abstoßung von Masse. Also quasi die Luft drückt das Wasser raus und beschleunigt somit die Rakete. Die Rakete landet auf einer ganz weichen Schaumstoffspitze wieder. Kann man also immer wieder fliegen. Es wird dann nur Wasser aufgefüllt und mit einer Fahrradluftpumpe aufgepumpt.
Jetzt steht das Ganze auf einer richtigen Startrampe. Das sieht schon sehr martialisch aus. Also die Startrampe ist riesig im Vergleich zur Rakete mit dieser 1,5 Liter Flasche. Die wirkt dann schon fast da zierlich dagegen. Das ist so, stellt ihr alles selber her und auch die Wasserflasche, in was sie reingeschraubt ist, das ist einmal so das Leitwerk und dann die eben schon erwähnte Spitze.
Ja, also die Startrampe muss natürlich schon ein bisschen größer sein, damit die auch einen super Stand hat. Es ist so, die Auslösung ist ja auch alles in der Startrampe integriert. Da schließt man die Fahrradluftpumpe an und hat man dann auch über einen Baudenzug 3 Meter Abstand zum Auslösen. Wenn man dann den Hebel betätigt, dann kann die Rakete da sicher gestartet werden.
Also deswegen ist es auch so nötig. Und das Leitwerk etc. Habt ihr alles selber entwickelt und wo wird es hergestellt?
Genau, also das Kunststoffheckteil, das haben wir in einem Jahr Entwicklungsarbeit so perfektioniert, dass es nämlich auf allen PET-Flaschen passt. Von 1 Liter bis 3 Liter können alle Flaschenformen und Größen verwendet werden. Das passt also immer für alles. Und es geht auch bei der Landung zum Beispiel nichts kaputt, weil es wird nichts geklebt, es ist nur aufgesteckt. Und wenn es mal eine harte Landung gäbe, dann springt einfach das Kunststoffheckteil runter und man kann es einfach wieder draufstecken. Ne?
Wie muss man sich das jetzt vorstellen? Wie viel Wasser ist da drin? Wie viel Druck muss ich selber erzeugen? Brauche ich eine spezielle Luftpumpe dafür?
Also ganz handelsübliche Fahrradluftpumpe, am besten so eine Standpumpe oder so eine Tretpumpe. Vom Luftdruck her 5 bis 8 Bar ist das Maximale, was man eigentlich braucht. Sie fliegt nicht unbedingt höher, wenn man mehr Luftdruck hat. Wassermenge maximal 1/3, lieber auch weniger. Und dann ist es so, die größeren Flaschen fliegen wesentlich schöner und höher, weil da kriege ich natürlich mehr Energie unter. Eine 1-Liter Flasche funktioniert auch schon, aber da erreiche ich nie die Flughöhe wie jetzt mit einer 2-Liter Flasche oder 3 Liter.
Ansonsten habt ihr so ein bisschen noch was Designtechnisches gemacht. Man kann sich jetzt raussuchen, welche Raketenspitzen man auf die Flaschen setzen will, was die Farbe angeht.
Ja, die Rakete gibt es in 3 verschiedenen Farben, gelb, blau und rot. Auch die Heckteile haben 3 verschiedene Flossenformen, je nachdem, was einem halt gefällt.
Wie oft kann ich das Ganze dann verwenden?
Ja, die Rakete ist immer wieder verwendbar. Das Einzige, die PET-Flasche, wenn die natürlich mal ein bisschen ramponiert ist, kann man die natürlich durch eine andere gebrauchte austauschen. Man kriegt das eine 25 Cent wieder im Automat. Also das ist Recycling von PET-Flaschen eigentlich.
Was bekomme ich denn geliefert, wenn ich das Set jetzt haben möchte? Was brauche ich alles?
Ja, es ist alles im Set enthalten, die komplette Startrampe, ein Modell mit Auslösegriff. Das Einzige, was man braucht, ist eine PET-Flasche und eine Fahrradluftpumpe und natürlich Wasser.
Und kostet dann im Laden?
Ja, 29,90 ist der Verkaufspreis für das komplette Set.
Was habt ihr denn sonst noch Neues auf der Messe? Ihr stellt ja auch andere Raketen her. Das sind schon ganz schön große Modelle dabei. Ich würde sagen, das höchste ist so, wenn ich schätzen würde, 1,20 oder so hoch.
Naja, die größte ist sogar 1,52 Meter. Das sind jetzt aber dann pyrotechnische Raketen. Die werden mit Treibsätzen angetrieben. Die haben wir ja schon länger. Was wir jetzt dieses Jahr auf der Messe neu präsentieren, das sind jetzt die Expert-Serie. Das heißt, es sind größere Modelle, so Super Rock Raketen, sehr lange, so bis zum 1,52 Meter. Dann ist es so, wir haben auch zweistufige Raketen. Ja, da werden dann der untere Treibsatz zündet dann während dem Flug den nächsten. Und dann eine ganze Menge an Cluster-Raketenantrieben. Das heißt also, mehrere Treibsätze werden gleichzeitig gezündet. Und somit kann ich natürlich größere Modelle fliegen. Ich fliege deswegen nicht höher, weil die Flughöhe macht eigentlich keinen großen Sinn, wenn ich das Modell nicht mehr sehe. Also Flughöhe sinnvoll ist so 200, 300 Meter. Das ist auch kein Problem zum Fliegen. Fliegen dürfen wir mit Modellraketen immer bis zur unteren Grenze des kontrollierten Luftraums. Und das sind im Normalfall 1000 Fuß, 330 Meter. Kann regional auch unterschiedlich sein. Manchmal sind es auch 520 Meter.
Brauche ich für die Raketen eine Versicherung, eine Modellbauversicherung?
Ja, normale Haftpflichtversicherung würde das Ganze eigentlich schon mit abdecken und so weiter, weil das eigentlich nichts groß Spezielles ist und auch von den Gewichten her sind die im Rahmen.
Was gleich auffällt ist, die Startrampe sieht recht ähnlich aus wie die für die Wasserrakete.
Genau, also die Grundbasis ist die gleiche. Dadurch konnte man natürlich super Preise auch für den Endkunden machen, weil man sehr viele Werkzeugkosten sparen. Und somit können wir auch die Wasserrakete und auch die pyrotechnischen super günstig anbieten.
Die gibt es dann auch sozusagen im Komplettsatz?
Genau, also da gibt es dann so komplette Starter-Sets, wo alles enthalten ist. Startrampe mit Modellbausatz, Treibsätze sind schon 6 Stück dabei, Elektrozündgerät. Man kann auch die pyrotechnischen Raketen mit Elektrozündgerät per Knopfdruck starten oder alternativ dann mit einem Feuerzeug mit Zündschnur.
Habt ihr Videoanleitungen auf eurer Page?
Ja, es gibt natürlich auch ein Video, da sieht man dann, wie das Ganze funktioniert, wie so ein Raketenstart durchgeführt wird, mit der ganzen Vorbereitung und bis zur Landung.
Wem das jetzt mit der Wasserrakete zu gefährlich ist, weil er sagt, jetzt kommen die doch recht schnell da wieder runter, bietet ihr die demnächst auch mit Fallschirm an? Dann kann man ja auch ein bisschen zugucken.
Genau, also wir arbeiten gerade an der Fallschirmauslösung für die Wasserrakete. Bei einer Wasserrakete generell ist es nicht so einfach, einen Fallschirm oben auszulösen. Bei einer pyrotechnischen, da ist es einfacher, das macht nämlich der Treibsatz. Am Gipfelpunkt gibt es eine kleine Explosion nach innen und es schiebt einen Fallschirm raus. Bei einer Wasserrakete müssen wir es anders lösen, aber da kommt eine ganz tolle, pfiffige Lösung raus.
Wer mehr wissen will, unter welcher Webadresse findet er euch?
Also www.raketenmodellbau-klima.de und da kann man dann alles auch nachlesen und anschauen, ja?
Es folgt ein Mitgliederwerbebeitrag der Redaktion Devil is Evil.
Aber das ist doch überhaupt kein Problem. Ich lade Sie einfach ein dieses Wochenende. Dann glauben Sie mir, ich habe wirklich einen ausgezeichneten Vertrag bei meinem Sender. Der zahlt alles. Kommen Sie einfach mit. Die Yacht steht im Hafen.
Verzeihung, mein Lieber, ich habe das Gefühl, es versucht dich jemand zu erreichen.
Würden Sie mich bitte für einen kurzen Augenblick entschuldigen? Devil is Evil, Rainer Jaguar am Apparat.
Hallo Rainer, hier spricht der Andrew Morgan von der Radio Z. Rainer, ich weiß nicht, ob dir klar ist, aber wenn du weiterhin ein Leben in Southern Brows führen willst, dann braucht die Radio Z neue Mitglieder. Und ich sage dir noch eins, wenn diese Nico glaubt, es reicht, einmal in die Monat bei der Radio Z anzutanzen und 2 Stunden dumm rumzubabbeln, könnt ihr euch eure Sendung an die Hut stecken. Weil es nämlich bald keine Mischpult und keine Mikro und keine frische Toilettenpapier und was weiß ich alles ohne die neuen Mitglieder mehr geben wird. Oder kannst du mir sagen, wie wir das alles bezahlen sollen, Freundchen?
Entschuldige bitte, wo waren wir stehen geblieben? Ach ja, der Turn. Mauritius. Glaub mir, du wirst Mauritius lieben.
Ist doch egal.
Rollo hat mir zu mir gesagt, kennst du sicher, Rollo Gebhardt.
Gar so
Mauritius war einer der Gründe, warum wir damals überhaupt mit dem Hochsegeln
bleibt der Shampoos für die Inselrunde.
Und deine Freunde? Ja klar, können wir die mitnehmen.
Radio Z braucht neue Mitglieder. Ich hoffe, das ist jetzt klar, Freundchen.
Ob es abgesehen von neuen Designs auf der Spielwarenmesse mehr von Carrera und ihren Carrera-Bahnen gibt, das erfuhr ich vom deutschen Meister, vom Amtierenden.
Okay, wir stehen hier vor einer Bahn gerade. Ist das eine spezielle Bahn, die nur für die Messe existiert oder ist das alles Standard?
Nein, die Bahn, die jetzt hier aufgebaut ist, wurde speziell für die Messe aufgebaut. Allerdings sind es alles Standardteile, die man so im Handel kaufen kann.
Und das Besondere an den Autos, das sind jetzt alles welche von den Designs auch her, die schon auf dem Markt sind? Oder sind das jetzt welche, die man sozusagen exklusiv hier auf der Messe mal testen kann?
Also hier steht jetzt im Moment das komplette aktuelle Carrera-Programm, wobei die Capris, die wir jetzt hier sehen, sind ganz neu. Die werden jetzt erst in 2017 auf den Markt kommen. Die beiden Modelle, die jetzt hier fahren, sind noch Handmuster, speziell für die Messe gefertigt und wir haben hier vorne im Bereich 1:24 den Ford GT in dieser blau-roten Lackierung, wie er dies Jahr auch in Le Mans gefahren ist. Der sollte letztes Jahr schon auf den Markt kommen, wird aber aktuell jetzt erst irgendwann im Februar oder März ausgeliefert.
Macht es mehr Spaß mit einem neuen Design zu fahren oder gibt es so den Klassiker, wo man sagt, den fahre ich am liebsten?
Ja, Klassiker sind natürlich jetzt immer so Autos wie der Capri, der hier gerade fährt. Gerade unsere Generation, die kennen natürlich noch den Winkelhock, den Ludwig, den Stuck. Und wir fahren natürlich gerne auch diese klassischen Autos, alte Gruppe C-Fahrzeuge oder auch Porsche eben im Allgemeinen.
Tut sich da technisch jetzt ganz viel auch in nächster Zeit oder geht es wirklich nur noch um Designveränderungen?
Also im Moment tut sich technisch gar nichts mehr. Es sind Designveränderungen. Wir sind eigentlich auf einem guten Level bei Carrera. In den letzten Jahren hat sich da fahrwerkstechnisch viel getan. Gerade im Bereich digital hat man große Schritte nach vorne gemacht und die Technik funktioniert mittlerweile einwandfrei. Und auch gerade dieses Wireless, was wir jetzt hier gerade fahren, sprich man muss nicht mehr schnurgebunden irgendwo an einer Stelle stehen, funktioniert jetzt einwandfrei. Man kann da wirklich gut mitfahren.
Das macht dann auch so ein bisschen mehr Spaß, wenn man mehr Freiheit hat, weil man einfach so in der Bewegung nicht mehr so eingeschränkt ist, ne, durch das Kabel.
Das ist richtig. Man kann sogar selber sein Auto einsetzen, indem man mal schneller hinläuft, wenn man gerade keinen Einsetzer an der Strecke hat. Man muss ja immer gucken, dass auch um die Strecke herum Streckenposten stehen, die bei einem Unfall das Auto schnell wieder einsetzen. Und bei diesem Wireless hat man wirklich Stellen, wo man weiß, man könnte schon mal verunglücken, stellt man sich einfach hin und stellt dann schnell sein Auto selber wieder ein.
Okay. Was steht als nächstes an in Sachen Meisterschaften, Wettbewerbe etc.?
Ja, ich hatte eigentlich damit gerechnet, dass in diesem Jahr wieder eine Carrera-Weltmeisterschaft stattfindet und als amtierender deutscher Meister hätte ich mich dann zur Teilnahme qualifiziert. Habe gehört, die soll wohl in diesem Jahr nicht stattfinden, aber offiziell habe ich da noch nichts weiter erfahren und ich warte jetzt eigentlich auf die Einladung.
Okay. Und so hier was Lokales, steht da was an oder was Deutschlandweites?
Ich selber komme ja aus Hagen, aus dem Ruhrgebiet in der Nähe von Dortmund und bin jetzt hier in Nürnberg mäßig gar nicht auf dem Laufenden, was da stattfindet. Diese Carrera Challenge Tour startet ja meistens so im September. Das versucht man natürlich das Weihnachtsgeschäft so ein bisschen anzukurbeln. Wir selber fahren halt mit einer Truppe regelmäßig alle 4 Wochen Rennen bei uns im Bereich Dortmund, Hagen und so weiter.
Und jetzt, was wir am Anfang nicht gemacht haben, vielleicht selber noch eine Vorstellung bitte, auch mit dem Titel gern.
Ja gut, mein Name ist Jörg Schmidt. Ich fahre seit meinem zweiten Lebensjahr Carrera, bin jetzt 50 Jahre alt, also seit 48 Jahren auf mehreren Systemen groß geworden. Habe aktuell selber eine 4-spurige Carrera-Bahn im Keller, nochmal parallel dazu eine 4-spurige Holzbahn, die ich für Events aufbaue und bin jetzt im Jahre 2016 deutscher Meister geworden.
Was macht die Faszination aus?
Die Faszination ist einfach dadurch, dass wir alle mit demselben Material fahren, einfach schneller zu sein als der andere und durch gute Kurventechnik den anderen einfach immer irgendwo ein bisschen Nasenlänge voraus zu sein.
Ein bisschen müsst ihr euch noch gedulden bis zur nächsten Spielwarenmesse. Ende Januar bzw. Anfang Februar 2018 ist es erst wieder soweit. Bis dahin heißt es www.spielwarenmesse.de für alle, die mehr Informationen wollen.
Lost and found. Found and lost. And lost. Found.
Hallo und willkommen zur zweiten Stunde Lost and Found in der März-Ausgabe 2017 hier auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z. Während wir in der ersten Stunde auf der Spielwarenmesse in Nürnberg unterwegs waren, geht es jetzt nochmal zurück auf die internationalen Filmfestspiele in Berlin, die hier bei Radio Z den ganzen Februar über, während sie liefen, im Stoffwechsel unter anderem zu hören waren. In dieser zweiten Stunde Lost and Found erwarten euch Interviews zu 3 Filmen. Es geht nach Brasilien, nach Mexiko und nach Schweden. Alle Interviews sind im englischen Original oder in der englischen Übersetzung zu hören. Ich wünsche viel Vergnügen beim Zuhören. Am Mikrofon und Technik Chris. As Duas Irenes, zweimal Irenes oder deutsche Titel des brasilianischen Films von Fabio Meira. Ein Film, in dem die 13-jährige Irene feststellt, als sie ihrem Vater zufällig begegnet, dass er noch eine weitere Familie hat und dass es nochmal eine Irene gibt. Gezeigt wurde der Film auf der Berlinale in der Sektion Generation K+. Jetzt im Interview der Regisseur Fabio Meira und seine beiden Hauptdarstellerinnen, Priscilla Bittencourt und Isabella Torres.
It's your first feature film for the cinema. So you produced a few short films and film for TV, but it's your first feature. When did you decide, I'm not going to shoot a TV movie again, I'm going to the cinema, to the movie theater?
É, toda a minha formação é de cinema. Então eu comecei trabalhando com o Rui Guerra, que é um grande diretor brasileiro, um diretor do cinema novo. E mesmo depois, quando eu segui para Cuba, assim, toda a minha formação e todo o meu interesse sempre foi no cinema. É, mesmo que eu fiz para televisão, eu sempre pensava que aquilo, o produto final era para o cinema. Então, para mim era um caminho natural, porque realmente é a minha grande paixão.
Começou a trabalhar com quem?
Rui Guerra.
Rui Guerra. Okay, so all my training is in cinema. I actually started working as assistant with Rui Guerra. That's a very important Brazilian filmmaker. And then I went on to study in Cuba, and everything was always about cinema. All my training and everything was about cinema. So even when I was working for TV, I always thought of the end result as I'm going towards cinema. So for me, it was a completely natural path to take.
Okay, that's good.
My real passion.
Okay, that's good. So you did not just choose to make a movie, you wrote the script as well. And I was wondering, I heard these stories with fathers with two families which don't know each other. When did the idea come up to you to do this?
Essa história vem justamente de uma história familiar minha, que eu com 13 anos descobri que meu avô tinha duas filhas, ele tinha vários filhos fora do casamento e duas filhas com o mesmo nome. Então eu fiquei com essa história na cabeça, muito tempo depois, 15 anos depois eu lembrei disso e fui investigar e fui conversar com a minha tia, só que a minha tia nunca quis conhecer a outra menina. Então o filme é o que teria acontecido se ela tivesse dado esse passo.
It actually comes from a family story of mine. When I was 13, I found out that my grandfather had several children out of wedlock, including two daughters with the same name. And then 15 years later, I remembered the story and I decided to go talk to my aunt, who was in that situation, with the same name, but I realized she hated the story and she wasn't interested and she had never wanted to know more about it. So I wondered what would have happened if she had taken that path, taken that step and wanted to find out.
So how long did it take you to write the story and then to find your two actresses?
No total foram 8 anos. Foram 8 anos, eu comecei a escrever o filme em 2008. E justamente isso, depois que eu comecei a escrever o filme, eu fui apresentando esse projeto em festivais, eu fui sabendo várias outras histórias de famílias na América Latina, de homens com famílias duplas, né? Justamente porque a América Latina vem de uma cultura muito patriarcalista. E a segunda pergunta, eu acho que você traduz e eu faço a segunda, eu já faço a segunda.
Como quiser. Bom.
E a segunda parte, que é sobre as meninas, também foi um processo longo, eu acho que foram 2 anos. A Priscila eu conheci com... de 12 para 13, sim. Conheci numa escola de artes em Goiânia. E a gente fez um processo muito longo. A gente testou umas 200 meninas. Dessas 200, escolhemos umas 20 para fazer um workshop. E nessas 20, ficaram elas. E outra coisa específica sobre a Isabela, é que a Isabela, eu vi uma foto dela num site de uma agência de modelos. E eu fiquei impressionado como ela se parecia com a atriz que já tinha sido convidada para fazer a mãe dela no filme. E aí eu fui atrás dela. Eu comecei a procurar ela e encontrei. E consegui convencer. E ela fez o teste. E foram ótimas. E mais do que tudo, também acho que eu tive muita sorte de encontrar as duas.
So, the film, yes, it took actually 8 years. 8 years, I started writing in 2008. And then I started presenting the project in different film festivals. And as I did this, I started finding out many more stories, many other stories in Latin America of the same kind of situation, because Latin America, we have a very patriarchal history, so that's important. I found out many other stories of the kind. And regarding the girls, that was also pretty long. It was about 2 years, regarding Priscilla, I met her in Guyana in an art school, music. And then we started, and anyhow, we chose about 200 girls, started doing some tests, then brought that down to selected 20 girls and started doing some workshops where this was going, the two came out. Now regarding, it's important to say, regarding Isabella, I originally saw a picture of her in a model agency, in a model agency website, and I was really impressed about her resemblance to the other actress that had been chosen to play her sister.
Her mother.
That's why. So I went looking for her. I went after her, and she did the test, and she was great. So I'm really, really lucky to have found them.
Is it possible to be shown in Brazil, or won't it be in cinemas in Brazil?
Sim, o filme tem distribuição da Vitrine Filmes, que é uma distribuidora muito importante de filmes brasileiros, e a gente estreia no segundo semestre.
Yes, it's going to be distributed by Vitrine Filmes, a very important distributor in Brazil, and it'll be released in the second semester.
So, can you tell us a little bit about the shooting? So, where is it shot? Does it matter?
O filme foi filmado na cidade de Goiás, que é onde exatamente eu filmei meu primeiro curta. E, por acaso, a casa da Mirinha é a casa da minha da protagonista do meu primeiro curta, ou seja, eu voltei para essa casa depois de 11 anos. Filmei na mesma casa que eu tinha filmado meu primeiro curta. E outra coisa... E qual era a outra pergunta?
Does it matter?
Ah, para mim não era muito importante onde ele se passava especificamente. Eu queria que fosse uma cidade meio deserta, com muito sol, que o sol fosse muito duro, que fosse árida, mas que fosse uma cidade latina, entendeu? Então, claro, elas falam português, então a gente imagina que é no Brasil. Mas para um finlandês, eu acho que não entende, se não souber nem o que é espanhol nem português, eu só queria que ele entendesse que aquilo ali é parte da América Latina.
Okay, so it was shot in the city of Goiás. That was actually the same city where I shot my first shorts 11 years ago. And by chance, the house where she lives is the same house where the protagonist of my first shot of shorts lived. So I shot the same house 11 years later. It's the same one. And now regarding the importance, it's not important at all where it takes place exactly, but what I wanted was for it to be like sort of desertic, arid, very... sunburnt city, and that for it to feel Latin. Of course, when you realize that they're speaking Portuguese, you can imagine that it's in Brazil. But for instance, for a spectator from Finland that doesn't understand, and maybe doesn't realize if it's Portuguese or Spanish, the thing is for him to feel that it's Latin America, for it to be really Latin American city or Latin American location.
So let's talk about scenes. So it starts with you
yes.
Smashing a window, and you can super fun. It was super fun.
Yes, super fun. And I got like it wasn't the second shot or the third. I don't know.
Fifth.
No. Okay. It was super fun. Like I always wanted like to break a window. So when I did it, I was like so like happy and like realized, you know, it was fun.
And there was another scene which should be really hard to play in the bathtub. How was that? Was it fun as well, or was it really hard work?
The bathtub one? The thing was because we had like to dry my hair many times so then we can like repeat the scene. But it was so good because the water was so like warm and there was like milk in it. And they say that milk is good like for the skin. So I love it. It was fun.
Okay. So what were there a very funny or a very hard scene for you as well?
Uma cena que foi muito divertida e uma que foi muito difícil para você.
A mais divertida acho que foi a do vinho, né? Porque a gente não parava de rir e era muito engraçado fazer uma cena que a gente estava bêbada, né? Fingir de bêbada. E também a cena que a gente fez, que a gente briga, porque eu achei essa cena Porque a gente no dia tava muito... A gente não parava de rir e foi legal fazer uma cena de briga, assim. Foi massa. E qual foi a outra pergunta? A difícil. Acho que foi a do beijo, por conta da repetição várias vezes. Mas foi tranquilo de fazer também, só foi ruim porque teve que repetir várias vezes. E não teve tanta tão difícil porque o Fábio me ajudava muito e... Na cena do banho, que foi a mais complicada, eu tive uma preparação boa com a Verônica, então na hora eu me senti tranquila de fazer.
Okay, so perhaps the scene that was the most fun to do was the scene where we're drinking and the idea of playing drunk and laughing all the time. Mm-hmm. That was really fun. Also, when we have to fight because we're all the time during the shooting we were laughing and everything. So all this was fun to have to do this. Now regarding the difficult scene, perhaps the kissing scene, because we had to. It was interesting, but we had to do it so many times. Yeah. We had to repeat it so many times. But yeah, and 24 times. But in general, Fabio was really, really supportive and guiding us. So maybe the bathtub scene was difficult. But Veronica was there with us, so it was really
prepared.
Yeah, we were really prepared and really.
So that would be my next question to you. How was it to direct these young actresses and to work together?
Primeiro, eu acho que, né, tipo, foi muito importante os pais terem confiado em mim, né, porque eles foram os únicos que leram o roteiro e eles não conheciam muito pouco, né, do meu trabalho. Eles chegaram a ver os curtas e tudo mais, mas teve essa confiança dos pais. E a mais importante foi a confiança delas, né, porque elas também não sabiam, elas não receberam o roteiro. Então eu ia contando para elas dia por dia o que ia acontecendo. Elas não sabiam nem o que acontecia com os personagens. Agora, fora isso, é um prazer, porque são duas meninas adoráveis, super inteligentes, que eu acho que é importantíssimo para um ator, né? Tipo, a inteligência é muito importante, além da emoção e tudo mais, mas as decisões que se tomam, né? E elas são muito, muito inteligentes. E eu tenho muito orgulho também de lançar as duas, entendeu? De ser o primeiro filme delas. E elas estarem sendo lançadas através desse filme.
One thing that was really important was for the parents to have trusted me.
Leram ou não leram o roteiro, os pais?
Não leram. Os pais leram.
Okay. Only the parents read. They read the script. The parents, but they didn't know much about my work. They saw my short films, but well, whatever. They just had that, and they really trusted me. So that was interesting. Now, it was also they trusted me. So that was very important. They didn't receive the screenplay. They were finding out day by day what was going to happen, how the situation was going to evolve. So it was really, really, really great also to work with these girls that are adorable and also very intelligent, and that is really, really important. Intelligence is very important in acting, beyond the emotions are very important and everything, but intelligence to understand the decisions and what's how things are going, that's vital. So I was very lucky, and I'm honored to have launched their careers, so I think they have great, great talent.
You didn't only work with trained actresses or actors. For example, the scene with the boys at the lake, were they just there, or did you hire them to jump in and do their things?
Não, isso vem de um trabalho de uma produtora de elenco que pesquisou aqueles meninos antes. Aquele garoto, por exemplo, ele era perfeito para o papel, e ele surgiu, ele apareceu num teste, e ele foi perfeito para fazer aquele papel. Mas, de qualquer maneira, eu acho que é um ótimo elogio para o filme, você imaginar que eles já estavam lá, né? Tipo, que quer dizer que funcionou, que aquilo soa natural. Que a gente conseguiu reproduzir um pedaço ali da vida, daquele lugar.
No, they came through a producer that knew them and that had worked with them and that knew also the voice. So they were chosen, they rehearsed and did the tests. But I think that this is a real compliment for the film. The fact that you wondered and thought that perhaps they were just there. That means that the film conveyed this natural and spontaneous feel that's a real compliment.
Okay, thanks. So, what's your next step? What's your next movie?
O próximo filme se chama Tia Virgínia e é sobre a relação de três irmãs também. Continua o tema das irmãs, só que vou para outra faixa etária. São três irmãs de 70 anos. Então, sobre o conflito dessas três irmãs e uma específica. Tipo, tem uma protagonista, mas você pode até deixar mais... Mas exatamente isso, são três mulheres de 70 anos e um dia na vida delas.
My next film is called Tia Virginia, Aunt Virginia, and it's about three sisters. Once again, we have the sisterhood issue, but in this case, it's in another age group. They're around 70s, and they're in their 70s, so it's about the conflicts between them. There is one main protagonist, so it's especially about one, but it's about the things, about the relationship between the three of them in one day in their life.
O que ela tem de muito específico é que também é uma família que os finge que os conflitos não estão acontecendo. Então é essa coisa, tipo, elas têm muita coisa na superfície, mas os grandes conflitos que se dão através delas são de situações menores, como o que, onde cada uma, em que quarto cada uma vai ficar, o que cada uma vai o menu da ceia, mas é sobre essas mulheres com incapacidade de comunicação também, apesar de serem irmãs.
So another particular trait about them is the thing that it's people that can't communicate about real things. That have trouble communicating about the real issues. So everything is like on the surface, but at the same time, all these conflicts explode for silly details such as who's staying in which room or what they're doing for dinner. So once again, it's about people that that despite the fact of being sisters, they're incapable of communicating.
So by the way, I really like the ending of the movie, but I like to know. Two more answers, is okay?
Just
1 minute. 1 minute, okay. Same question to you. What's your next project?
I don't have anything in mind yet, but I am like working, like I'm doing theater and some like acting classes, so then I can like keep doing it because that's what I want to do for life. But I don't have any projects in mind yet.
Também não tenho nenhum projeto.
Yeah.
Também quero continuar com isso, acabei de terminar o ensino médio, vou tentar fazer uma faculdade de artes e tal, seguir com isso também. Mesma coisa.
So I don't have any specific project either, but I also want to go on with this. I also want to continue doing this. I just finished high school and now I hope to go to art school or theater arts to an art faculty or to art school. But yeah, no specific project, but I want to go on with this.
Okay. Ihr hört Lost and Found auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z und wir sind weiter unterwegs auf den internationalen Filmfestspielen in Berlin und wandern von Brasilien nach Mexiko. Maria Novaro ist die Regisseurin des Filmes Tesoros, ein Film, der an der Küste spielt in Mexiko, eine wunderbare paradiesische Gegend zeigt und bestimmte Dinge ganz bewusst ausblendet. Eine schöne Geschichte mit Kindern, die Abenteuer erleben, zur Schule gehen und einen neuen Ort, eine neue Heimat finden müssen, sowie neue Freundinnen und Freunde. Hier kommt die Regisseurin Maria Novaro im Interview.
So we had a wonderful movie today in the Sioux Palace, the opening.
Happy, yes.
You were happy as well?
I was delighted. I had no idea how the film could work for children of other language, of another culture. And it was the most heart-feeling experience to see all these children react to the movie the way they did. They enjoyed what I was showing them, they enjoyed the story, they liked what they saw on the screen, they let me know in the Q&A after the screening, they made wonderful questions. I was delighted this morning, really. It was one of the happiest moments in my career.
And you see, it even works if there's a different language, subtitles and somebody voiceover. It works.
It worked. I was terrified by that. I was all the time I said, I never thought it's a film for children, but I only thought of my own children, my culture, and speaking Spanish. I played a little with the English language and this English man with his children, but I didn't see more than that. And now I'm in Germany, and it's the German children, and there's this voice translating. I was terrified by that precise thing, and it worked. It worked, and I think it opens the mind of children. One of the children said, "Why did you make this film in Spanish?" He said, which for me meant he would have loved to have the film in German. But then I said, "Well, it's another country. That's what we speak." And he was okay with that. He understood that's the way the world is, and it's diversity.
Would you say it's a children film? Because I would say it's for boys and it's for girls. Uh-huh. Because of what's happening in the movie.
Yes.
The actresses and the actors, both ways, great, the uh-huh. children. And it's also for adults, for families. So it's a family movie?
I really truly thought of it for the children. I always had in mind the children. I wanted to tell them something. I want them to see on the screen something that would make them powerful and happy with the world, and decided to change it and to really understand that another world is possible, because it is there. It is still there. And that world is possible, especially in my country that is with awful problems at the moment. So that was in my mind, but in the way I wanted the camera to be at the following the children, if the adults went into the frame, okay, but if not, we would not go and look for them, etc. But then I discovered that older people and grown-ups enjoyed it too, and enjoyed it when they went with their children, obviously, but also when they didn't even like children, because we have all been children. And it felt like memories, it felt like playing, it felt like liberty. And that was a discovery that came afterwards. I had no idea it was going to work like that. I'm happy it works like that.
The world in the movie, it's a little bit like the Garden Eden.
Uh-huh.
You know, the sea is the
yes.
Garden Eden.
Yes.
It's a paradise for the kids and for the people living there.
Yes.
But was it always while shooting, or did you have some storm and rain and bad weather, or was it always nice and sunshine?
No, nice and sunshine. Well, I was shooting at this time of the year in Mexico, which is January and February, which our winter is mild, especially there. It's not so hot, not so many mosquitoes, no rain. So I chose the time of the year, and it was perfect, the time of the year. People are very nice, and the place is as beautiful as you see it.
It's not fake.
It is true. It's absolutely true. But it's also, and I did that deliberately, it's also one of the most difficult states in Mexico right now because of the violence. It's the state of Guerrero. This organized crime, people know about it, people have disappeared. There are real, real problems. And of course, this was a film for children, and we were not talking about that. We were talking about the other things we do have, because they are confronted every day to the violence, corruption, and impunity that is being lived in my country. They know about it, the children know about it, we all know about it. But here we would say, well, this is also true, and this is our strength, because it is also true, and it is our strength.
But at the end titles, you have some words about the students killed and so on.
Yes. For example, that school where I shot the movie, the school in Barra, is a real school on the beach by the sea, beautiful school with three classrooms, one from first and second grade, one for third and fourth grade, and the other. The teachers are wonderful. And all the teachers in that state of Guerrero come from a school for teachers, that's Ayotzinapa. And that's where 43 students that were going to become teachers, school teachers, disappeared because of problems with drugs, with the organized crime. And they disappeared, And we have been fighting in Mexico to say, we don't forget, you disappeared them. They were students, and this cannot go on. So that has to do with that community, and that has to do with that state, and that is true. And I could not say it. But of course, the film is for children, not for that. Because I really, really, really wanted to help the children realize that we have so many positive things going on in Mexico, and our culture is so rich, so delighted in life, so happy with having delicious food, wonderful colors, art. I love my culture, and I think our strength has to come from there. We have to fight from our culture the horrible things that are happening in our country, and especially children, and our biodiversity. We have a mega biodiverse world, or I don't know how you say that in English, but really it is a very rich country in resources, in natural resources. Well, that's the future of the world. We have it. What will we do about the other thing? Okay, we have to find it here. It was something like that, what I was trying to portray in my mind. And I'm not lying about anything. I'm only focusing in this because all the pain is also there in my country. Mm-hmm.
And you also teach some lessons in a very nice way, uh-huh. in a mild way about the environment. So because yes. We need the crap in there, what's it called?
The bottle top,
yeah. Yes. And we see it in a book, and then we see it in real life and saying, it can't be true.
Yes. And we were very careful with the children. We put the bottle tops near the crabs, so that they would go into it. But then we made the ceremony when it changed and we got the shell back to the crab. But we wanted to talk about those things. Be careful. We have the iguanas, we have the whales, we have this wonderful, the children today, they laughed, and I felt their joy every time an animal was on the screen, be it an iguana, or they were talking about the whales with the little turtles that are released in the sea. I could feel the joy of the children. They were really happy to see the little turtles going back to the sea. And it made sense to me to put the children in touch with that and say, this is our world. Let's not lose it. That's happiness.
Was it a special casting process for all of the children, or just the three main characters, or let's say five main characters? How many main characters are there?
Well, no, it started with my grandchildren. Three of the children are my grandchildren. Andrea and Dylan, two of the blonde kids, are my grandchildren. The little one is the child of the photographers, so Lucas. And then Jacinta, the daughter of the biologist, she's also my granddaughter, so they were casted immediately for my film. The rest were casted in the process. And I really enjoyed letting the personality of each one of them and the strength of each one of them and the beauty of each one of them come through in the film. I tried my best not to let, at the beginning it feels like that, like, oh, these are going to be the main characters of the film. But I really tried to show that, no, they arrive and they provoke something, but the real characters are all of them. And whoever was willing in the scene to be more present would be more present in the scene.
What I really liked was the absence of smartphones.
Yes. The tablet is there, and technology, and I wanted also children to, oh, it's okay, let's use the technology. I liked very much the idea that I had in the script, because it came from my own grandchildren, whatever. Rather than having a pirate map, use Google Earth. It's more precise and it's wonderful. So yes, we have Google Earth. We don't need a map printed on paper. But at the same time, let's go outside, move around, see the world, and use the technology for relating to the world.
Mm-hmm. Was it, for example, the scene with the turtles? Was it a one shot, or did you have to grab them again?
No, one shot. We had in this camp where they released turtles, they were to tell us when they had the little crabs, the little turtles that came out of the eggs. So they phoned us, and we had to do the scene that day, and it was like crazy with two cameras. Let's release the turtles, but it worked. It worked, and the children were so delighted to have the little turtles in their hands and release them. It was so real that children enjoy animals, enjoy life. The idea of let's save this turtle and let it go back to the sea, and as Jacinta said, let's try to protect them from ourselves when we are predators. It came from them. They really felt like that, in complicity with the animals. And I love that. I explore that a lot.
And I also love the other side when the kids are hunting for the crabs.
Yes. Yeah. And that was very shot in a documentary way. The two local kids were teaching Dylan to fish crabs. And he really got bit by a crab. Those things were really happened when we were shooting.
But he was touching again
and being very careful, and he did it like that. He really took the pincers and pulled the and then it was true, he tasted the jaibas for the first time and he loved them. He was like, when we shot another scene eating he would always say yes. He ate, I think, 9 crabs or something, because they are delicious. And he learned how to eat them. Those things were absolutely real. We did it in a documentary way, and it worked.
Yeah, it's funny. So it's always, adults can see different things in a movie than kids. Uh-huh. So there's a different type of reception of the movie. And I think on the kids level, it was a great work you did. So how long did you write on the script? So, and how much did you have to perform on set, so let it go?
No, I wrote the script to raise money and whatever. I had very clear ideas. I want them to look for the treasure. The treasure we will find is something else, really. I knew those things. But shooting the film, it was very much, we'll go try to find the treasure. I told them the story of Francis Drake. I told them there was a real possibility of finding a treasure in the area because he was there, which is historical. I told them those things. We'll shoot the movie and we'll try to look for a treasure. I don't know if we'll find it or not, but we'll look for it. And they knew they had to look for an ex. Those things were real, and we were playing those things. We didn't know, they didn't know, and I said I didn't know if we were, because I always said we might find the treasure after all, but if not, we'll enjoy ourselves looking for the treasure. And that was the motto of everything. That, with that said, we had a lot of freedom in every scene. I had a clear idea of what we were trying to reach in a scene, but there I would allow them many, many liberties. I never fed them lines or tell them what they had to say, never. And it worked. It took patience, it took 2 cameras, but it worked. They were so much into the plot, and they were so much enjoying what we were doing, that it worked.
And what I loved is how warm they were welcomed at school, because they had these issues. Oh, I don't want to school. I don't want to move at all. I don't want to be here, and the school will be boring. And then she's going to find new friends.
Well, she's in that age, Andrea. She was in that age, like, not being very... She would complain, being in Barra, she would complain that the internet sign was slow and things like that. That happened with Andrea, being an 11-year-old. So I pushed it a little, I made her a little more angry, and then she really adored to learn how to dive. That was paradise for her. So those things really happened, and we worked on them. But the personality of each child is his real own personality, and I didn't lie about any of that. Jacinta's father and mother are not biologists, but Jacinta is like that. She loves animals, she loves telling stories. I found what each one of the children were. I enjoyed finding out who they were, and I worked with them to show their own personalities.
Is it already shown in Mexican cinemas?
No. We're going back on the 3rd of March. We're making a big screening in Barra, the place. I'm getting them an inflatable
screen.
Screen, and I will take them the film. I took the film for them when I had the final cut. I wanted them to approve the final cut and to be okay with it. And it was awful on a wall with bad sound, with mosquitoes. It was terrible. And they said, well, when it is really finished, I'll bring an inflatable screen. And that's going to happen on March 3. They are very excited. And I think that's the most important screening I'll ever have in my life. And after that, we're going to the Guadalajara Festival. And I hope I get distribution in Mexico. But not yet.
And hopefully in Germany, or do you already have?
No, I don't.
Not
have.
Yet. So wish you good luck. Yes. Thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
Radio Z verabschiedet sich für heute. Radio Z sendet täglich von 14 bis 2 Uhr live auf der UKW 95,8 sowie im Kabelnetz auf DAB Plus und via Livestream auf radio-z.net. Radio Z ist ein Programmangebot von Radio e.V., der Rundfunk-Aktionsgemeinschaft demokratischer Initiativen und Organisationen. Adresse Kopernikusplatz 12, 90 459 Nürnberg. Telefon 0911 450060. Geschäftsleitung Silvia Glavion. Programmverantwortung Heike Demmel und Stefan Wagner. Morgen um 14 Uhr geht es weiter mit Radio Z auf der 95,8. Bis dahin könnt ihr im Kabelnetz auf DAB Plus sowie im Livestream die Wiederholungen der heutigen Sendungen hören. Die genauen Wiederholungszeiten der einzelnen Sendungen sind ersichtlich auf radio-z.net. Radio Z ist ein Mitgliederradio. Neue Mitglieder im Verein sind jederzeit herzlich willkommen.
Radio Z, ihr hört Lost and Found auf der 95.8. Mit einem kleinen Rückblick auf den einen oder anderen Berlinale-Film. Jetzt geht's um einen Kurzfilm, Min Homo Sister, zu Deutsch Meine Homo-Schwester, eine schwedisch-norwegische Kurzfilmproduktion von Lia Hietala. Und sie war natürlich auch in Berlin zu Gast. Es geht um eine große und eine kleine Schwester und um eine Freundin. Viel Vergnügen im Interview mit Lia Hietala.
Hi, I'm Lia Hietala. I'm the director for My Gay Sister. And I'm here in Berlin for the festival, and it's amazing.
So it was a world premiere of the movie. How did you like it?
I mean, like, it was amazing. We were a whole team here to see the world premiere of it, and it was just astonishing to see the reactions for the film. And there was a lot of kids in the audience, and you can definitely feel the tension, and people were like laughing and having like also laughs in different areas that I didn't expect to have that kind of response to. So it was very, very nice.
The interesting point is, so we have the original language.
Yes.
And we have the subtitles in English, and then we have the voiceover, and it still did work.
Yes, I definitely think it did. I mean, like, it was a live dubbing person sitting a few steps behind me, and I think she made, like, a really good job, really trying to make the different dialogues in Germany, and I could definitely tell by her acting also that she managed to get it through to the audience, so it was very nice.
So your point in doing the movie was you wanted to show a relationship that was regular and normal, a queer relationship. So where does this idea come from? When did you start to write the script?
I started to write the script about 1 year ago. And it developed from some personal experiences of me not having the ability to decide which kind of sexuality that I'm defining myself as. And I wanted to take that further and to go down to kids, where we assume that kids are heterosexual until they prove or tell that they're different. And I wanted to make a twist to that and just try to normalize that children can also think about being in love with someone of the same gender.
And what I liked is there was nobody around who talked and told them you are bad and you can't do that, and you know, these voices for sure.
Yeah, and that was definitely a thought that I was having with me all the time, to make a film that doesn't focus on queer personalities being an issue, being queer and having troubles with the society or people around them, telling them that there's something wrong with them, and just try to embrace that we're different.
There's a really nice relationship between the two sisters. They interact, it's marvelous how they fit each other and help each other out. How did you come up with that story?
Well, I wanted to do the story, and I thought about doing it with the parents instead. And then I wanted it to be a younger generation. So then I decided it to be a bigger sister. And I think it developed into being a really good chemistry between them. And I think it's an interesting way of sibling relationships and trying to be similar and trying to be independent and following the same path and trying to, control each other in some ways and trying to make, the bigger sister tries to get the little sister to make choices that maybe she's not ready for. Yeah.
But it works in the movie. When they are there, there were nice places you shoot it on. So where did you find all these places as well?
I've been living in Tromsø, where it's been shooting when we shoot it. I was living there during 2015. And it's very close to where I've been traveling around. And also my Norwegian producer is born and raised in Tromsø, so he was helping us find the locations and such.
And where did you find your actresses?
I've been working with Erica Coleman, the one that plays Maiken, the girlfriend, in two films before. One where I was assistant director and one that I was directing. And Tina Purdavoy, the bigger sister, I've been keeping my eyes on her for almost a year before I was casting, and I was very determined that it's going to be her. And then it was just a really huge job to find someone that was quite similar looking to her. And I found Juliet at like a supermarket store in Stockholm when I was street casting, so it was a lucky shot.
So, there's a lot of dialogue in your movie, really a lot. Yes. So, was it intended from the start, or was it going to be that way?
It was absolutely intended. I had a script, but I wanted to make a film where the actors were in focus and their way of improvising scenes and situations and having free speech and to say whatever they wanted, but controlled in the situation and what I was having in mind. So there's a lot of dialogue because it's very much improvisation around situations.
So you give them the situations every day, or did you say, though, this is a whole script, you could do this or that?
We had a script and they read it. Then we had to change it during the shooting because it was raining like all the time. So I was making up some scenes during the shooting because we were like, this is not working. We have to find a new location and find something else to build the situation on. So it was developing, it was a big pre-production of it to find the from the point A to point B in the story. But during the shooting, the actor was very patient with me let them know about the situation maybe some hours before.
Did all the parents agree with the movie from the beginning, or did you have to go to the parents and say, I want to show this, I want to do this movie?
I mean, the two actors that are the older ones, they're over 18, so the parents are not involved. I mean, like, I have their whole family supports them doing their thing. The main actress, who is 10, her mom was definitely involved with the story, and I was telling her about it, and she was very supportive. So it was very comforting for me to have a supportive mom of the main actress.
What did you like most in the shooting process? Seeing your work getting a movie.
I love when actors get a free space, and my actors were so supportive of my idea, and they came with so many new ideas to set on their own, and that was definitely the most amazing with it.
And what didn't you think about in advance, and what trouble did you get in on the set, or were there no trouble at all?
There were a lot.
Beside the rain.
No, but there was, I would definitely say that the film has changed from the manuscript. There was quite a big conflict that is not in the film that we cut out because it didn't fit the editing. It didn't fit the form of it, but it also didn't really fit the acting because the conflict was very more controlled instead of improvised. And that I realized afterwards, that I should have done the conflict more improvised. So yeah, that changed during the process. But it was also interesting to realize how I really enjoy working. So yeah.
Is it easy to produce a short film in Sweden? Is there financial support from the state or film funding?
The film was actually supported mostly from north of Norway during the pre-production and shooting. I got a scholarship from the North Norwegian Film Institute to start off the film, and they were very supportive the whole way. And then in the post-production, we got the Swedish Film Institute to cover the cost for the post-production. So it's both countries. It's always hard to get funding for the films. But this time we managed, so now we're here.
And how did you find your crew?
I've been working with Karin, who is the cinematographer for... She was the cinematographer of the film that I was assistant director on. And there we found each other, and she was very early in the process, and we worked very close to each other. And the rest of the team, the composer is Katarina Nuttall, a very, very, very amazing composer that also worked on that production where I was assistant director. And I managed to get a lot of contacts during that production, which I'm very happy for.
Do you think about a feature film about this theme, or similar, or the same theme, but in a different way?
I don't have a feature film that I'm thinking about about children. I'm having a feature film right now in a startup that is about a law that was recently set in Sweden that is assistant. I don't know how to say it in English, but it's if you need help getting pregnant, you at least, like, both part of the relationship needs to be 25 years old to get help. And I'm making a story about that right now with two lesbians the law gets involved with their relationships and starts to tear the relationship down because the younger part in the relationship is only 21 when they apply to get help from the hospitals, and that's also a very political and a very queer point of view on it. But it's also going to be a drama, and try to get in some comedy in it to not make it like so dark.
Funny story: in between, a friend of mine is gay, and he wanted to have a child. And two friends of his are lesbian couple, and they wanted to have a child as well. And they agreed to have a child. And they all want to raise it, so part-time here, and he is going to be a father as well, but not living in the same house. And it worked, so they didn't have to go to a hospital and they didn't have to have sex. What's the other part?
Yeah, yeah, and it can definitely work that way also, and that's amazing. And it works like that sometimes in Sweden as well, with insemination of the sperms, and you can get help from other male friends or and such. But we still have a long way to go in the idea of how to create a family, and who are allowed to create a family, and in which point of life are you allowed to do it. So that's what I want to focus on next.
So when I see your movie, do you have a vision for the future of queer people living together?
I'm sorry, I don't...
Do you have a vision for the future of queer people living together in Europe, in different countries?
We definitely have a vision, absolutely. Like, I definitely hope that it's going to be more and more normalized, and that the world starts to realize that there is nothing wrong and there's nothing that should be taboo about living with people that you love.
Have you seen any other movies at the Berlinale with a queer theme? Or?
No, we haven't. It's been quite the busy schedule during the weekend. I'm going to see a Swedish film tomorrow, which is going to be the first feature film that I see here at the Berlinale. It's called Sami Blood. It's a Swedish director debut film, and I'm very, very looking forward to it.
So when people want to see your movie, it will be hard to watch it in Germany, but is there a chance in the web? Is there a web page? Are there trailers on YouTube?
Sorry, say that again.
If people in Germany want to see your short movie, mm-hmm. Mein Homo Sister, is there a chance to see it somewhere in Germany? Is there a chance to see it in the web or homepage with a lot of trailers, something like that?
Well, we're talking to some sales agents. I've been meeting some of them tonight, and they're very interested in the film. We don't have any sales agent in Germany right now, but we definitely hope for it. So hopefully very soon.
Is there a homepage? Can you mention a homepage?
Yeah, there's a homepage at thenewstories.se where you can find information about the film, but also on Facebook at Min Homo Sister or My Gay Sister, where you can find information about it.
So thanks for the interview.
Thank you.
Mehr zur Berlinale und zu den Filmen findet ihr auch in meinem Blog unter www.fraktalorg.de. Da gibt es noch zahlreiche mehr Interviews und Infos zu den einzelnen Produktionen. Die nächste Ausgabe Lost and Found hier auf der 95.8 bei Radio Z gibt es in der Nacht von Mittwoch, den 5. auf Donnerstag, den 6. April zur gewohnten Zeit zwischen 0 und 2 Uhr morgens. Diese Sendung nachhören für eine Woche lang in der Mediathek von Radio Z unter www.radio-z.net. Ich wünsche noch eine angenehme Nacht und verabschiede mich am Mikrofon und Technik.